And we're holding on Chof Amr Aleph by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Ad Shela Nimcha Kam Vila, until the scroll is erased and dissolved into the water, Omra Eni Shosa, if the woman says at any point during that time, I'm not going to drink, so she doesn't even say that I'm Tomei, she just says, I don't want to drink, as we discussed yesterday, there may be where she's trembling, there may be where she's not. Whatever the case, the point is that fine, she can take it back, she doesn't have to drink. Some Megillosa Nignezes. So now, what happens, in other words, we already wrote the Megillah, but we hadn't yet erased it. So then, in that case, that Megillah has to be put in Gniza, because you can't use it anymore. As the Mishnah is going to go on to say, that you can't use it for a different, Saita, because it has to be written Lishma, so it can't be used for a different woman. So the Megillah has to be put in Gniza, like any Kisri HaKodesh that you can't use. Rashi says you put it at the side of the Heichel, the Tzidei HaHeichel. Tosfos books from the Yerushalmi that actually you don't, you, what you do is you put it under the, you put it under the hinge hole of the Heichel. Doors in those days were made in a way where the hinges were on top and bottom, and the bottom hinge would go into a hole in the threshold, and the top one would go into the top hinge pin, would go into a hole in the lintel, and then in the top of the door frame. So now, the Yerushalmi says, what you do is, in this case, you take the Megillah, and you put it into that bottom hinge hole, and over time, the door opening and closing gradually wears it out. There's some discussion about that. I mean, you're not on the factors. You're not allowed to erase Kisvei HaKodesh, but here you're not directly erasing it. It's only indirect. Anyway, it's very possible, and it brings on the side over here, that when Rashi says, B'tzidei HaHeichel, in fact, it might be not B'tzidei with a dalet, but B'tzirei in the hinges, in which case he's saying exactly the same thing as Tosfos is saying. Anyway, so you put the Megillah in Gniza, wherever it is, as far as the Mincha, which at that point was already placed into a Kli Sharis, so therefore you can't redeem it from Hektish. So instead you scatter it and burn it on the Beis HaDeshen, on the place where Posel HaKorbanos go. Rashi brings from the Gemara in Zvachim that there are three places in the Beis Mikdash complex where they would burn where they would burn things that are called the Beis HaDeshen. One of them was in the Azara, one of them was outside the Azara, and the third one was further out. So here, since it was a mincha that was already in a Kli Sharis and became and had Kedush Seguf. So now that it's possible, because there's no need to bring it anymore, since she said, I'm not going to drink, and therefore we stop the procedure right there. So therefore we put it on the Beis HaDeshen, on the first one, the one that's in the Azara itself, off the Mizbeach, but in the Azara, where they burn certain kinds of Posel HaKorbanos, and they scatter it over there, and Rashi points out that it doesn't just mean they scatter it and leave the raw flour over there, it means they scatter it and burn it over there. Anyway, that's all before the scroll was erased. Nimchaka Megillah, what if the scroll was erased? V'omra Tmeyani. Now we learned before, she doesn't have the option anymore of saying, I'm not gonna drink. At that point, as the Mishnah is gonna go on to say, we're gonna force her or convince her to, but if she says Tmeyani, if at any time she actually says, I'm Tomei, then we also stop the procedure. So then Hamayim Nishpachin, the water is just poured out, you know, so the whole point is, in other words, the point of the water is to test her to see whether she is Tomei. If she admits I'm Tomei, then there's no need for the water anymore. So you just spill it out. Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that there's no kedusha in the water. Once the ink was dissolved in it already, the actual writing itself would have kedusha because it contains Hashem's name. But once it's dissolved already, then there isn't. Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, in fact, would you, instead of spilling out that water, would you maybe be able to use it for a purpose such as mixing with clay to make bricks or something? However, the Yerushalmi says, no, there is a certain residual kedusha in it. Don't use it for a degrading purpose like that. Just go and spill it out. And again, the mincha gets scattered on the Beis HaDeshen because it can't be used anymore because there's nobody to use it for. So uh, Okay. Continues the Megillah. Nimchaka Megillah v'amra eini shosa. I think I skipped the line actually. V'ein Megillas akshedav alahashkus. But so to Acheres, who Megillah in the first case where it wasn't dissolved yet. Her Megillah is not kosher to give a different sota to drink, because again, it has to be written Lashma. There are achronim actually who bring up an interesting convoluted scenario where maybe you could use it again for her herself. Now, we did learn before that if it's the same husband and the same boil, then you don't give her to drink again, because then if he's already suspecting her a second time, then we say we don't go through the whole procedure. But you could have a scenario where she says I'm going to drink it, and they went through, and eventually the edim came. It turns out that the edim for the kinui or for the stira are edim zomimin, and therefore it's considered as though nothing happened over here, and those edim are going to get punished. And then it happens in the future again that the husband suspects her with the same guy, and therefore you could actually have a scenario maybe where she herself ends up being a soita again. And so then it might be kosher. It was, after all, written Lashma, and it is still the same woman and the same husband. Anyway, okay, so then we said Nimchakam Dilavama Tmeyani,
if you're putting it under the hinge. And 2-3 months later on, she's suspected again. It's already rubbed up by
obviously, in that case, it would be too late, right? In the scenario we're talking about over here, where we're saying that where these achronim are talking about conceivably, you could use it for her. Yeah, obviously, we'd have to be talking about that. It all happens within a fairly short amount of time. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, the Mishnah had said Nivchakam Megillah. We said if the Megillah was erased, on the Tmei Ani, and she says I'm Tomei, Hamayim Mishpachim. We said we pour out the water and Chasim Esvazeres Al Beis Hadeshen, and we scatter and burn her Mincha on the Beis Hadeshen. What about Nivchakam Megillah VaOmer Eini Shoisa? But if the Megillah was dissolved and then she says I won't drink, but she doesn't actually say I am Tomei, then, as we learned before, Ma'ar Noisa, we're going to force her. We're going to force it down her throat. Now we're going to pour it down her throat, or mashkenoisa bal kocha, and make her drink it against her will, because now at this point we still need to check out the situation. And as we learned in the first parak as well, we don't only for now in the previously in our parak we learned about forcing her and maybe opening her mouth with pliers and a kalbus and all that. We learned in the first parak as well that they also try to talk her into it more gently. They tell her that if in fact you tell her, then don't worry, it's not going to have any bad effect on you. It's like putting a medicine on a dry area of the skin where if there's no wound there, nothing happens. But if all that talking to her doesn't help, then they still force her to go through with it, unless she actually says I'm Tomei. As we learned yesterday, also, you know, there was a difference whether she's trembling when she says that or whether she's calm. Because if she's trembling, then you could say that it's just that she's afraid of it. So then, therefore, we have more reason to think that we should still go ahead with it, as opposed to if she says it calmly. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. So now, when she drinks it, Einim Aspekas Lishtoi, and if, when she drinks it, if in fact she is Tomei, if in fact she was Mizana, Einim Aspekas Lishtois, she doesn't even have the chance to finish drinking it, Ad Sheponeha Merikos, before her face turns greenish, or pale, or whatever, the Einera Beltis, her eyes start sticking out. Back in the first paragraph, we had these examples of Midah Keneged Midah, that she painted her face with cosmetics, and she painted around her eyes with cosmetics, and now those get harmed. The Mismalis Gidin, and she becomes full of Gidin, meaning, in other words, like the blood vessels under her skin start sticking out. Rashi brings that also all over her skin, all of a sudden you start having rows and rows of swellings. The Sifri compares it to as if like there are sticks stuck in under her skin, so you keep on seeing like a ridge sticking out and then going in and sticking out and going in all over her body. Anyway, So the Haim Omrim, and when that starts happening, when she starts swelling, and her face starts turning pale, and she starts swelling up, and her veins are sticking out, and whatever, the Haim Omrim, the Kohenim would say, Hotzi'uha, take her out of here, Shalota Tameh Ha'azara, so she doesn't make the Azara Tameh. All this time, she's been standing in Shaar Nikanor. So now, if she stays there any longer, she's going to make the Ezra's Nashim Tameh. We'll discuss in the Gemara, at the bottom of Amud Beis, what exactly, what kind of Tumah are we talking about, because on the face of it, Tumas Mess is not such a problem. Shaar Nikanor is outside the Azara, and a mess is allowed to be there. So we'll get to that. We'll get to that in the Gemara. Anyway. So, and eventually then you have, then they'll continue the things that it says in the Pasuk, with Sub Sabitna Venafla Yurecha, that her stomach swells up and her thigh falls off, and so on and so forth. Continues the Mishnah though, Im Yeshla Zchus, if this woman has a Zchus, and we'll learn in tomorrow's Gemara Bez Hashem, what kind of Zchus can protect her, Toilala, then that can suspend her punishment for a while. So then what will happen is, that we're going to discuss in the Gemara, does that mean nothing happens to her at the time she drinks the soda water? Or does it mean that things start happening, she does start turning pale and her eyes sticking out and so on and so forth, just it doesn't progress as far as the Vitzav Sabitna Menafla Yurefa? We're going to be discussing that in some detail in the Gemara here and also in the next parak. Anyway, so then it would suspend her punishment. Yesh schus toila shana achas. There can be a schus that suspends her punishment for 1 year. V'yesh schus toila shtei shanim. Another kind of schus that's greater and helps her for 2 years. V'yesh schus toila shalosh shanim. And other schus that helps her even for 3 years. At the bottom of Amud Beis, Tosfos brings an example from the Yerushalmi, examples of all three of those, that it suspends for 1 year. Actually, our Gemara itself is going to bring, at the bottom of Amud Beis and the top of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, is going to bring an example from Nebuchadnezzar, where his punishment was delayed for 1 year because of tzedakah that he gave. The Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, we have an example of 2 years. In Sefer Shmuel, after you have the whole story with Amnon raping Tamar, then it says 2 years passed, and then his brother Avshalom had him assassinated. So what happened during those 2 years? He was doing Shuvah Ma'aseh and Tovim, and learning Torah in particular. So therefore, that saved him for 2 years. And 3 years, you have an example with Ahav, where after he had killed Navos, and then Eliyahu comes to him with a very harsh nevuah, how his whole family is going to be destroyed. He did tshuva, and then the pasuk says 3 years passed, and then they went to war against Aram, and he was killed in the war. So you see that he was saved for 3 years in the schus of Mice and Tovim that he'd been doing. So we have examples of 1 year, 2 years, and 3 years. So the Mishnah continues, Mikan Omer Ben Azai, based on this, Ben Azai says, Chayev Odom Lamedes Bitei Torah. A person, a man, is obligated, it would be an excellent idea for him, to teach his daughter Torah. Even though, in principle, the mitzvah of Talmud Torah applies only to boys, Vishinantam of Anatha. Women are not chayev in Talmud Torah except to the extent of the things they need to know for the halachas and whatever they need to know. Nevertheless, Ben Azai says it's good for a man to teach his daughter Torah, she'im tishta, because it shouldn't happen later on in her life that she ends up being a sota and drinking the sota water, teda, then she'll be able to understand from this, she has schus toilala, that the schus helped her. In other words, when she sees, she'll learn the parasha sota. She'll learn the parashas sota. She'll realize this concept that schus toila, which the Gemara is going to be deriving it from a pasuk. So now she'll realize, now she'll understand that concept, and therefore she and other people will understand that if she doesn't die immediately after drinking it, then even though she's guilty, then people will realize it's not because the mei sota don't work. It's because she has a schus. So it would be good to do that. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer disagrees. He says a person shouldn't teach his daughter Torah. Kol ha'malamed bitei Torah. Anybody who teaches his daughter Torah, ke'ilu loim de tifus. It's as if he's teaching her tifus. Actually, the word ke'ilu is in parenthesis over here because later on the Gemara is going to ask, that what does it mean? What do you mean, loim de tiflus, or malam de tiflus? We'll explain in a second what tiflus is. But anyway, the Gemara doesn't even quote the word ke'ilu, implying, and the Gemara says that's what the Mishnah means. So this is one of those examples where the Gemara fixes up the wording of the Mishnah, and later on, copyists put it into the Mishnah itself. But anyway, what is Tifus? So Rashi just refers to the Gemara, and in the Gemara, Rashi explains that Tiflus means Rashi elsewhere explains that it means Aveira, that in other words, that teaching her Torah is going to lead her to the ability to do a, it's going to make her like, it's going to make her smarter and sharper, and it's going to give her ideas of how to do Aveira and get away with it, kind of. The Rambam has a different understanding that it means that tiflos means silliness. Like she's going to understand the words of Torah on a very superficial level, and therefore she's going to misuse them. So whatever the case, Rabbi Eliezer is saying, because of that, a man should not teach his daughter Torah, not like Ben Azai is saying. Closer to our times, you know, it used to be for thousands of years, Taka it was, you know, Jewish girls and Jewish women got their chinuch at home from their mothers. Once in a while, you had exceptional women who became Talmidei Chachamim. Bruya is an example. There's other examples here and there in Jewish history of women who were very learned. Friedrich Rebbe describes in Sefer HaZichronos. There were women, the Alter Rebbe's mother and grandmother and aunts and whatever, were all very learned in Torah. There's examples here and there in history of Rosh Yeshiva where their daughters would actually give shiurim to the Talmudim, and many times they would sit in a separate room so that the Talmudim don't actually see her and come to hear Hurim. Whatever the case, there have been examples like that. But in general, Rabbi Eliezer is saying you shouldn't, because then they don't understand it fully, and then they come to misuse it. Closer to our times, as we know, about 100 years ago, famously, Sarah Schneer started the Beis Yaakov movement, and many Gdolei Yisrael of that time supported her, including the Chofetz Chaim, wrote quite a bit about that, and they explained that, look, nowadays, anyway, women are much more out in the public sphere than they were before. As it is, they're getting a lot into Tiflos anyway. And as it is, the Masorta of Jewish mothers teaching their daughters is breaking down because there was so much assimilation and so forth going on at that time, as there still is now. So therefore, we need such schools, and therefore this business about learning the Tiflos doesn't really apply anymore. That everyone's pointed out also, when you get down to it, the fact that almost all the girls' schools have the Mordechol, they can be yotze their tiflos with that. They end up thinking of that as tiflos, and therefore they can be learning Torah more lishma. Anyway, Rabbi Yeshua continues in the Mishnah more on this topic of women and tiflos. Roitzer isha b'kavla tiflos mites kavna precious. A woman would rather have one kav, meaning a much smaller amount of food and resources or whatever, and together with it she has tiflos, which again means like the ability to be silly, or the ability to have tivus and whatever, as we said before, that one meaning of tiflos is avera, is znus, so not znus per se, but at least the tivus of it, at least, for example, that her husband should be close with her and they should be able to have relations more often, mites kavim precious, rather than nine kavim and abstention, meaning, the Gemara will eventually explain what it means, what Rabbi Yeshua is saying basically is, back in Ksubas, we talked about the idea that you have different people depending on their jobs, different men depending on their jobs, have different frequencies of oina, different frequencies when they have the mitzvah to be together with their wives and be intimate with them. So we said there are some people who every day, others twice a week, Tamid Chacham once a week, and then you have people, let's say, for example, camel drivers, donkey drivers, and sailors and whatever, who have much lower frequency because they're out of town a lot. So Rabbi Yeshua is saying, for example, you know, imagine you have a woman whose husband had a job that where he's in town and he's able to satisfy her needs more often, and now he wants to get a better paying job that's going to take him out of town. So we'll give them nine kavim, you know, give them a much more comfortable parnosa, but nevertheless she may not want it because of the precious, because it means she's going to be that her husband is going to be away from her more often. So we see, in other words, Rabbi Yeshua is saying that yes, women like their tiflus, and therefore, To the extent that when they learn Torah, then that feeds into that tiflos, then like Rabbi Eliezer is saying, then you should be careful with it. There are Mephoshim will explain actually that when it says Rabbi Yeshua Omer, implies that he's actually arguing with Rabbi Eliezer. So one of the Mefarshim on the Mishnayos says that it is actually slightly different. Rabbi Eliezer is saying Rabbi Eliezer is saying that the learning Torah makes her sneaky and crafty, which is again one of the meanings of Tiflos, and therefore that would apply when it's Torah Shabbat Peh, but Torah Shabbat Sav would be fine. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua is implying that even Torah Shabbat, that even Torah Shabbat Sav would be an issue. So according to that, Rabbi Yeshua would actually be going beyond Rabbi Eliezer and saying that even Torah Shabbat, it's not good for her to learn. On the other hand, the Tiferes Yisrael is saying he's not really arguing, he's just building on what Rabbi Eliezer is saying. That as it is, a woman has a tendency towards Tiflus, so therefore don't teach her Torah, because then that just feeds into the Tiflus that she already wants. Continues the Mishnah. Hu Haya Omer, he, Rabbi Yeshua, used to also say, chosid shoter, a foolish chosid, and in the Gemara we're going to define all of these things. So foolish chosid, the rosha orum, and a crafty rosha, the isha prusha, and a woman who is a prusha. So he just mentioned the idea that women don't like prishus, they don't like having to be away from their husband and unable to have relations for any significant amount of time. So here we have a woman who is a prusha, and we'll see examples of that in the Gemara. Umakos prushin, and the wounds of prushin. So prushin in general, again, means people who are separated, but more specifically, prushin often means the chachamim, and people who are careful with dinim of tumah v'tahara, and they're called prushin because they have to stay away from the amei ha'aretz. They're not allowed to touch them or be in contact with them. We often find in the Gemara, and we find it also in the writings of Josephus and whatever, that the word prushim or Pharisees in English was often used as a derogatory term of the Chachamim. Most of the time in the Gemara, when we find the word prushim, it's like quoting the Tzdukim or other groups like that speaking in a derogatory way about the Chachamim. Here we're saying that you have people who look on the outside like Chachamim and Tzaddikim, but really they're not, and we'll see in the Gemara what this means exactly. So he says, Harei Olam Mevale Olam. All these people wear out the world, because all these people make it look on the outside like they're good chassidish from people, and really they're not. And really, as the Gemara is going to end up saying, each of them is really using it as a cover for activities they shouldn't be doing, and therefore that wears out the world. People think that they're good, and they learn from them, and it turns out it's not so. So we'll see, and that chafal of chafdeis, the Gemara is chafdeis, mainly the Gemara is going to be dealing with all of those and explaining what Rabbi Yeshua means by all of those. Okay. So now, we mentioned in the Mishnah about erasing the Parashas Sota, and we mentioned also in the Mishnah the idea that, again, that the Megillah that was written for one Sota is not kosher to use for a different one because it has to be written Lashma. So now the Gemara is going to get into a discussion about this matter of it being written Lashma. The Gemara starts off with something that seems to be completely irrelevant, but we're going to eventually tie it in and show what it has to do. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Mishum Rameir. And Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, in turn in the name of Rameir. The difference is Amar Shmuel means he heard it directly from Shmuel. Mishum Rameir means he didn't hear it directly from Rameir. He heard from his Rebbe or whatever that it goes back to Rameir. Anyway, Rabbi Meir says, "So you see, loymed Torah etzor Rabbi Akiva. When I was learning Torah by Rabbi Akiva, who you see matu kan kantan l'soichadioi. I used to put Rabbi Meir, as the Gemara is going to tell us, was a soicher by profession. So he says, I used to put kan kantan into my ink. Kan kantan we talked about the other day is some kind of mineral, some kind of chemical or whatever. Rashi and Tosfos in a few places in Shas disagree exactly what it is. It's a copper sulfate or iron sulfate or whatever. It has the property that by itself, it's not black, but you put it into the ink, it makes it black. They often use it in Sofer's ink nowadays, and it prevents the ink from being erased. So I used to put kankantum into the ink for my Sifrei Torah, but Lord Amalei Dover and Rabbi Akiva never said anything to me. He never had a problem with that. Shabosi Eitzer Rabbi Shmuel, but then Rabbi Meir continues, when I came to learn Torah by Rabbi Shmuel, Amalei Dni Mamalachtecha. So he asked me, my son, what's your profession? What do you do for a living? Amarti Lo Lavrani. So I said, I'm a Lavra, which is another word for a sofer. Omali, so Rabbi Shmuel tells him, Bni, have a zohir, be very careful with your work. Shemalachtecha malachas shemayim. You should know your work is work of Hashem. Writing Sefer Torah, Tefillah, and Mezuzahs is writing on behalf of Hashem. And you're helping people do mitzvahs, but you have to be very careful. Shem tachzir ois achas, a tachzir ois achas. If you accidentally leave out one letter, or you put in one letter extra, then you're destroying the whole world. In what way is that? Rashi gives an example. Let's say, for example, you have the pasuk Vashem Elokim Emes. It's not in Chumash. I mean, Rameyah was writing not only Sefer Torah, he's also writing books of Nach for people. So you have, for example, the pasuk in Yirmiyah Vashem Elokim Emes. We're there. That's actually because of that pasuk that we put Emes together with Ani Hashem Elokeichem at the end of Kriyishma in order to evoke that pasuk. Anyway, imagine if a sofer writing that pasuk accidentally leaves out the word Aleph of the word Emes. Then he's writing Chasu Shana Hashem Elokim Base. That would be a terrible thing. That would be after courses. There's other examples of what about giving an extra letter? Rashi gives an example. Let's say he's writing Bereshis Bara Elokim, and by mistake he puts a vav after the word Bara. Now it says Bereshis Bara U Elokim, which makes it plural. So making it sound as though there are two gods who created the world.
That's
Makar Kolayla. It destroys the whole world because now people are going to learn from that. They're going to learn after courses, and it's going to destroy their entire world. There are other examples that Tosfos brings in other places. Tosfos elsewhere and Tosfos Shants over here gives another example also involving a pasuk from Nach. You have, let's say, there's a pasuk in Yechezkel that says Hoiva al Hoiva Tavoy. Hoiva means destruction. So destruction will come upon destruction. Now what happens? The second Hoiva, if you put a Yud before it by mistake, then you have Hoiva al Yudke Vovke, destruction on Hashem. And that would also be wrong. More generally, though, Api Kabbalah, there's the idea that the whole Torah consists of names of Hashem, that even though, you know, it's arranged into words and then into words and sentences and whatever that we can understand, but fundamentally it's names of Hashem, and then the Ashpa of the Lakus comes down to the world through those letters, and therefore if a letter is out of place, then it causes an interruption in that. There's a piece in the Zohar, which we say in the Minor Lashon, that mentions that one time it says there's some people had brought a Sefer Torah to the cemetery there was a drought or something, and they went to the Beis HaKvaris to ask the mason to daven to Hashem on their behalf, and they had a Sefer Torah with them, but then the Sefer Torah, it turned out, had one letter wrong in it, and then these neshamas, when they're coming in front of the Beis in Shamayla, when they're coming in front of Hashem to ask, then they're told, you know, there's something wrong over here. And there, the pastors, as I think the Zohar mentions, what the extra letter or the missing letter was, it wasn't one that changes the meaning, unlike these examples from Rashi and Tosfos, and yet still it was a problem. So, anyway.
We're going to find also that in some Torahs that so much things hidden.
Yeah, there's meanings between the words, yeah. Anyway. Amartiloi, so Reb Meir continues, I said to Rabbi Shmuel, Dover echad yeshli shani matal sechadioi, I have a certain substance that I put into the ink, the kankantem Shmuel, it's called kankantem. Now what does that have to do with anything that Rabbi Shmuel just told him of being careful about leaving out or adding letters? The Gemara is going to explain soon what Reb Meir meant by that. What does one have to do with the other? Right. So Omali, but Rabbi Shmuel says to the mayor, "V'chimatilin kankantem osechad yoy." Since when are you allowed to put kankantem into ink? Hatorah omo umocha. The Torah says about the parashas soita that you should dissolve it, implying ksav sheyochal leimochas. So it has to be writing that could be erased. So now the Gemara says, "My ka'omalei or my ka'mahadulei." What's going on in the conversation over here? What is Rabbi Shmuel saying to the mayor that causes Rabbi Meir to answer that he uses kankantem? What does one have to do with the other? So like this, Hachi Karmalei, what's going on is like this. Rabbi Meir answers to Rabbi Shmuel, Loi mi boi v'chaseres v'yeseres debak yano. Needless to say, when it comes to words that are choser or yaser, that are missing a yod or a vav, where there should be, where there's a nekuda, or where there's one, where there's an extra one, sometimes you have, for example, a word, let's say like avoseichem in the psukim, sometimes is written without a vav for the cholam, sometimes with it, other such words. So needless to say, Rabbi Meir says, the bakiyana, I'm an expert in those. And in fact, we find a Gemara in Megillah, for example, that one time Rabbi Meir was in a place called Esya for Purim, and he didn't have a Megillah over there. He wrote out an entire Megillah Baal Peh. So he was an expert. He knew the entire Tanakh letter perfect. So needless to say, I'm Bucky in that, and therefore I know to be careful not to make mistakes like you're describing. And by the way, Maratz Chayus makes an interesting point. You have the Midrashim that mention that they, that Reb Meir's Sefer Torah had, had different, in some places, had different wording than what we have. For example, by the, when it says that Hashem made kosnes ur, that Hashem made garments of skin for Adam and Chava, and we learned at the end of the first parak, Machlokas, what those kosnes ur were exactly. Were they made out of linen, out of wool, whatever? Anyway, he had the word ur with an aleph in his Sefer Torah. Now, Mephoshim explained, doesn't mean Chas V'Shalom that he wrote his Sefer Torah wrongly with an aleph rather than an ayin. It means that he would write a note over there by the side to be aware of the drosha of Ur that Hashem made for them garments of light. So now, but the Maratz Chaya says, part of what Rabbi Shmuel is warning Reb Meir, be careful with making notes like that on the side. A later generation is likely to think that that's, that, that means that you're correcting, that that's the way it needs to be inside the actual Sefer Torah. Anyway, but in context of our Gemara over here, he's just saying that be careful to write the words properly. So he says, needless to say, in Chaseiros and Yiseiros Hambaki, Ela, people of Mechash Lizvug, you should know, even when there's a concern that there might be a fly, the Dilma Osi V'yosva Taga the Dalad, you might have that I write a Dalad, and then a fly, while the ink is still wet, then a fly comes and lands on top of the, on top of the, of the piece that sticks out from the back of the Dalad, Umachitle, and rubs it out on the Shavile Reish, and therefore makes the Dalad into a Reish. And sometimes that can be a real problem, like when you have Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, if you turn the Dalad into a Reish, it's a big problem. So Reb Meir says, don't worry about that, because Dover Echad Yeshli, Shani Matav, will say, I put Kankantim into my ink, and since that prevents it from being erased, then therefore even a fly sitting over there and moving around over there is not going to cause anything to get erased. So that's the connection. Rabbi Shmuel is saying, be careful about Chaseiros V'Yaseiros. Reb Meir says, I go the extra mile to make sure that letters don't get erased or transformed into other letters or whatever. I put Kankantim into the ink. So why Rabbi Shmuel has a problem with that based on the Pasuk Mocha, we'll get back to in the Gemara soon, but first the Gemara asks Amy, is that so, that Reb Meir first learned by Rabbi Akiva and then by Rabbi Shmuel, and that Rabbi Akiva was fine with him putting Kankantum and Rabbi Shmuel was not? Vatanya, Omer Reb Meir, Shoyisi Loimed Torah Itzer Rabbi Shmuel. Another Braisa has it the other way around. When I was learning Torah by Rabbi Shmuel, Hoyisi Mato Kankantum Losei Chadjoy, Veloy Amuli Dover, I put Kankantum in my ink and he didn't say anything. Shabosi Itzer Rabbi Akiva Osra Alai. And when I came to Rabbi Akiva to learn by Rabbi Akiva, then he asked it to me. So, Kasha Shimush Hashimush. So you have a contradiction. Who did he learn by first, by Rabbi Akiva or by Rabbi Shmuel? Kasha Osra Osra. And you have the contradiction. Who asked it to him, Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Akiva? So the Gemara says, Bishlemish Shimush Hashimush Le Kasha.
And you asked him when he's writing a...
That's what we're going to figure out soon. Are we talking about only when he's writing Parsha Sota, or is he talking about when he's writing a Sefer Torah in general? Tosfos points out, by the way, that fact is that by Reb Meir's times, there was no Sota procedure being done anymore. Reb Meir lived after the Churban, and even before the Churban, we're going to learn at the end of the Besechta, Reb Yechim and Zakkai, stopped them doing the May Sota anymore because people were committing Znus, and then the husbands weren't clean of Averis either. By Reb Meir's times, they're not writing the Parshas Sota anymore, but we'll get back to that point soon, whether in fact, why it would be that Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Akiva had a problem with him using Kankantum. Anyway, the question is, so who is it that answered? So the Gemara says, Bishlemesh Shimush Hashimush Le Kasha. Okay, when it comes to the learning, there's no Kasha. Me'ikra Ofel Kameh de Rabbi Akiva. First, Reb Meir came to learn by Rabbi Akiva. Kivan de Leimotzi Kom Alibe. But he couldn't understand, he couldn't literally kol maliba, means to stand on his part, meaning to be able to figure out what Rabbi Akiva is saying, because, for example, Rabbi Akiva would be teaching him Torah and explaining about a certain kind of thing. Let's say you might have something that's Tomei, and Rabbi Akiva would tell him that it's actually Torah and show him logical reasons for that. Eventually, the mayor himself developed that skill as well. The Gemara tells us in Erevin that he was able to do that kind of thing as well, to argue the wrong side of the issue, to explain why this should be Torah, even though objectively we know it's Tomei, or vice versa, and for that reason, in fact, Rameir's Haberim eventually were also Lo Yochlu Lamed Al Daita. The Gemara says they couldn't figure out what he's getting at, because a lot of times he would do like that in order to sharpen them. But now we're saying Rabbi Akiva first used that method on Rameir. So then Reb Meir couldn't understand it. He couldn't figure out what is Reb Akiva saying that is true, and what is he saying only in order to test me and sharpen me and whatever. So therefore he went to learn by Rabbi Shmuel, the Gomar Gemara, and he learned Gemara. Now Gemara does not mean over here what we think of as Gemara. Rashi explains it means more like the Mishnayos. Gomar means an Aramaic word meaning to learn. So he learned the Mishnayos, he learned the basic halachas as Rabbi Shmuel had learned them from his Rebbeim and so forth, going back the whole chain of Torah Shabbat. So now that he has all the facts clearly arranged and he knows for sure what's Tomei and what's Tahor, and therefore he's not going to be misled by plausible arguments to the contrary, now, Hodr also Kameh de Rav Akiva, now he was able to come back and learn by Rav Akiva, Savar Svara, to learn the Svaras, which is what we think of as the Gemara, to understand why is this Tomei and this Tahor, and why is this Osir, and why is this Mutter, and what are we basing it on, and so on and so forth, and to be Maven Dovim, to deduce one halacha from another. So he had to wait until he had the actual facts of the halachas clearly arranged in his mind, so that now, for example, he knows in a certain case something is Tomei. Now when Rabbi Akiva gives him very plausible sounding arguments for why it should be Tahor, Rabbi Meir is going to know that no, this is only Rabbi Akiva testing me or sharpening me or whatever. It's not that he actually holds that it's Tahor, because the fact is I know from already having learned from Rabbi Shmuel that it's Tomei and so forth in all the other cases. So that explains why one Braisa mentions him learning by Rabbi Akiva and then another one learning by Rabbi Shmuel, because in fact that was the order. First Rabbi Akiva, then Rabbi Shmuel, then back to Rabbi Akiva. Ela Osra Osra Kasha, but you seem to have a contradiction about who asked it to him, Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Akiva. So he says, you're right, Kasha, that is a difficulty to reconcile the two Mishnah, the two Braises. Okay, Kasha is not too often, it means we're not slugging anything up, but we have a contradiction between the two Braises. What happened over here? Okay. So now, what's this business about using Kankanta and the Parasha of Sotah? So Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Hoyer Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir used to say, "Lakol matilin kankantim l'seichad yoich." For writing anything, sefer Torah, tefillin, mezuzas, you are allowed to put kankantim into the ink. Chutz miparshas sota bovad, with the exception of the parashas sota. Even when you're writing a sefer Torah and you come to the parasha of the sota in the middle of parashas nasa, you cannot write that with kankantim ink, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second. Why not? So there are different other places where Tosfos and other Rishonim discuss, does that mean, we're saying that Rav Meir is saying that, but does that mean that would actually be how it's supposed to be? Maybe in fact, that when Rabbi Shmuel was telling him before, you can't write with Tankantim because then you can't dissolve it, maybe in fact that would apply not just to the Parshas Sota, maybe it would in fact end up applying to the rest of the Torah as well. And therefore you can't write any of it with kankantim ink. And then the Ritva says the other way around. He says that that would be back when they had the ritual of the Sota. Nowadays that we don't have it anymore anyway, then there's no problem writing even that portion with kankantim. Lamaisa, you see that Sofrim mostly use kankantim ink nowadays, and then even the Parasha Sota is written with the same. Anyway, Rabbi Yaakov Omer Mishmoy, Rabbi Yaakov says in the name of Rabbi Meir, a little bit differently, Chutz miParashas Sota Shel Mikdash. It's not with the exception of the Parashas Sota in a Sefer Torah, but rather except for the Parashas Sota in the Bis Mikdash. So the Sefer Torah itself, there's no problem writing with ink, with kankantem. You can't dissolve it, doesn't matter. But when you're writing Parashas Sota in the Bis Mikdash, you cannot use ink with kankantem, because then you won't be able to dissolve it. So the Gemara says, "My Benayu, what's the difference? What's the underlying argument between the first version of Rav Meir and Rav Yaakov's version of Rav Meir?" So Amar Rav Yemi, Limchik Laminatora Ike Benayu. The argument between them is, can you use a piece of a Sefer Torah to use for Sota's Parsha and erase it for her? So according to the first version of Rav Meir, according to the Yehuda's version of Rav Meir, you could conceivably take a Sefer Torah, which has the Parashas Sota written in it, in the middle of Parashas Nasa, let's say with the Apostle of Sefer Torah, but let's say whatever, it doesn't even have to be. The fact is, you know, we know that the very idea that we're taking a section of the Torah, including Hashem's name, and erasing it, is usually something that would be also, but Hashem allows it for the Parashas Soida. So the same way would be even if you're taking a piece from a Sefer Torah and doing it, and then afterwards you'll write a new Yiriyah for the Sefer Torah to make up for the old one. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda holds that you would be allowed to take a piece of a Sefer Torah and use it for the Sota. So therefore, he says, therefore that section of the Torah can't be written with Kankantum, because again, it has to be able to be dissolved. Whereas according to Rabbi Yaakov's version, you anyway can't use a piece of a Sefer Torah for that, because it has to be written Lishma, and therefore it doesn't matter whether in the Torah it's written with Kankantim or not, because anyway you're not going to be using that for the Sota. The actual Parsha Sota that's being written in the Beis Mikdash, sure, you would have to use without Kankantim, because you have to be able to dissolve it. And the Gemara points out, Bahani Tanoi ki Hani Tanoi. Now these Tanoim, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yaakov then, are arguing in the same machloikas as two other Tanoim. The Tanya, we learned in a Braisa. We learned in the Mishnah, we said in the case where the Sota says that I'm Tomei, and therefore we stop things right there. Aim the Gilosa Ksheril Hashkas Basota Acheras, who Megillah is not kosher to give to drink a different Sota. And Rab Achi Bar Yoshi said that no, the Megillah would be kosher to give another Sota. So in other words, it seems like the Tanakama of this Braisa says it has to be written Lashma, and Rab Achi Bar Yoshi says it doesn't have to be written Lashma. So the Gemara is assuming that that's the same Machloikas as can you write it, can you take it from a Sefer Torah? The Sefer Torah wasn't written Lashma of this particular woman after all. It would be the same machloikas. Omer Papa Duma Loihi. But Tosfos, by the way, gets into a bit of discussion over here about the Gemara itself is going to get into a discussion in a minute about the matter of Lashma in connection with a get. We know that a get has to be written Lashma, and you can't have, for example, that it was written, let's say, as a practice get, or it was written even for somebody who has the same name or whatever. So the Gemara is going to point out the difference between this, between this and Gittin, and by the get, you have an extra word over there that shows that it has to be written Lashma, whereas here is the Gemara is going to be saying, maybe it doesn't necessarily need to be written Lashma, only erased Lashma, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. So Omer Papa Duma Lohi, maybe it's not necessarily the same machlokas. Ad kam lakoma tanakama hozam. You know what the Tanakama in this Braisa, which is also the Tana of our Mishnah, had said that the Megillah of one Sota is possible to use for a different Sota. The difference is elokivin de intik lashum rochel, because this parasha of Sota that was written for the sake of rochel, intik literally means pulled away. So Rashi explains, in other words, like it was uniquely, like it's uniquely for her. It's like pulled away from being for any other woman and specifically designated for her. So when it's designated for Rachel, loy hodra mintika lishum Leah, then you can't redesignate it for Leah. They're two different people. Aval Torah, the stomach siva, but the Torah was written stam. You didn't have any particular sota in mind when you wrote it. Maybe indeed even the Tanakama of the Braisa and the Tana of our Mishnah would hold that you could use from a Sefer Torah. They would say that once it was designated for a particular woman, you can't redesignate it, but maybe you could take one that was written Stam, and that would be good enough, and you don't have to, to begin with write it for her name. Again, like Tosfos says, there'd be a difference because by a get, it says Chosav Loh Sefer Krisus, and we learn from that the writing has to be Lashma, because it says B'chos of law. Here it doesn't say law, so maybe you could say that it's good enough to have generic intention that this is a parasha sota, as long as you're not having it in mind for a particular woman. And Omer of Nachmi Yitzchok, and similarly Rav Nachmi Yitzchok says, he was another way of showing that it's not the same machlokas. Duma Lohi, again, maybe it's not that. Ad kan laka Omer of Achi Bar Yoshi Hosam. You know, Rav Acha Bar Yoshi is only talking in his Braisa when he says that if it was written for Rochel, it's kosher for Leah, he would say, Fakef, Elab Megillah, Fakef, that's by the Megillah, there's more reason to say that. Because after all, the Megillah was written on behalf of the curses of a Sota. So fine, it wasn't for this Sota, but it was for a Sota in order that if she's guilty, then all these curses will happen to her. Aval Torah, the Islamic Ksiva, but the Torah is written not for the Klolos, but in order to learn Torah. Hachinami Dilemachinon, maybe indeed, even Rav Achi Bar Yoshi would agree that you can't take a Sefer Torah and use it for a Sota because it wasn't written for that purpose of Olos at all. So therefore, suppose Rav Papa and Rav Nachman Yitzchok are saying that not necessarily is this the same Machlokas. You have the Machlokas whether you can be moshed from the Torah. You have a different machloikas of whether if it was written for one woman, can it be used for a different woman. Not necessarily, although it's the same machloikas, you could actually have the Tanoim who argue whether you can take it from Rochel and use it for Leah. They might both agree that you can't use it from a Sefer Torah. And the Tanoim who hold that you could use from a Sefer Torah might both agree that you can't take it from Rochel and use it for Leah. Because again, there's a difference because that's the point. In other words, because on the one hand, you have taking it from Rochel and using it for Leah has the drawback that it was specifically designated for one woman, and now you specifically want to redesignate it for another woman, and maybe you can't do that. On the other hand, you could say the fact is it was written for the sake of a Sota, and therefore, unlike the Torah, which is not written for the sake of a Sota at all, it's written to learn from. So both the Papa and Rav Nachman Yitzchok are pointing out that's not necessarily the same machlokas. So the Gemara asks, but Rav Acha bar Yoshia Lesle, does Rav Acha bar Yoshia, who says that you could take a Megillah that was written for Rochel and use it instead for Leah, doesn't he agree with the din that we learn in Masechet Gittin, cost of Lagarishas Ishtoi, that if a man writes a get to divorce his wife, the Nimlach, and then he changes his mind and doesn't want to divorce her, or Motze Ben Iroi, somebody else from the same city finds him and who has the same name, but Omalay, and he says, Shmi Kashimcha, my name is the same as your name, Vashem Ishti Kashem Ishtacha, my wife has the same name as your wife, and we both come from the same city, so give me the get that you were going to use, which you're not going to use anymore, and let me use it to divorce my wife. Possible. So that possible garish by that get would be possible to divorce with because it has to be written l'shma. Doesn't Rav Achi bar Yoshia agree with that? Now, fine, he's a Tana, he can agree with the Mishnah, but we never find him arguing on that point. When it comes to the halachas of Gittin, implying that by a get he agrees that it has to be written l'shma. So why here does he say any different? The answer is Amri. So they give the answer, Hosim b'chos of loch Amar Rachmana, because there the pasuk says that it has to be written for her. But it isn't Ksiva Lashma, so the actual writing has to be Lashma. But Hochanami, V'osallah, so here also V'osallah, here also it does say V'osallah, but my Asiya Mechika, but the word Asiya over here doesn't necessarily mean, Rav Achi bar Yoshia would say, it doesn't mean the writing, it means the dissolving of it. The dissolving of it has to be done in Lashma. And we had a few days ago the example where you had where two of them were dissolved into one cup, and then they divided up the cup and gave it to the two women, whether that works or not. But sort of Achi bar Yoshia agrees with the idea that it has to be erased l'shma, so he says that the v'osa law means that. In fact, Mephoshim point out that since we're b'chlal, do we have the mitzvah and the Torah not to erase Hashem's name? So you have the expression loisasun kein l'Hashem alekeifim. Don't do this kind of thing that Torah describes. You have to destroy every desire, but don't do like that to Hashem, which is where we learn that you can't erase Hashem's name. So therefore, the va'osa over here actually means that the erasing has to be done. The va'osa, what you would normally not be allowed to do, and here you're allowed to do, has to be done l'shma. But Rabbi Akiva Yoshe would say the writing does not have to be done l'shma. Therefore, he would say it would be fine to take one that was written for Rochel and use it instead for Leah. Now, halacha is not like him. Now, halacha is like the Tana Kama and like the Tana of our Mishnah that you can't do that though. The writing also has to be l'shma. Okay. And as far as using from a Sefer Torah, also the halacha ends up being that you can't do that. It has to be written specifically l'shma, and therefore Sefer Torah, which is written generically and not for the purpose of Sota, then you can't use it either. Which therefore then this sort of comes out as far as the matter of Kankan time, then it would come out, then there's no problem writing even the parasha of a Sota in a Sefer Torah with Kankan time, because you anyway can't use it for a Sota. The only the Megillah Sota itself can't be written with Kankanim. Okay. The Mishnah had said, Adam Aspekas Lishtos, the Mishnah had said she doesn't even manage to finish drinking, Ad Chiponeha Chol, before her face starts turning green, and so on and so forth. So the Gemara says, Mani, Rav Shimon. Now, who does that, now, when we're saying that as soon as she drinks, all of a sudden everything starts happening, that seems to go according to Rav Shimon. where we learned the other day that he says that first you bring the Korban Mincha, then you give her the drink. And we know that the Kamad like Korban Minchasa like Batila Maya, we know that until the Mincha is offered, I mean, until the Koymetz is offered on the Mizbeach, then, and we learned the other day, Reb Machlokas, Reb Yechon, and Reb Chanina, how much of it has to be burnt. Anyway, then the water does not start testing her. Dichtiv minchas zikaron maskeres oven. The pasuk calls it a mincha of remembrance that causes her aveira to be remembered. So now according to the Chachamim, where we learned the other day, they said first you give her the drink, then you offer the mincha, then the effect of the water would have to be delayed until after the mincha is brought. Here the Mishnah is saying the moment she finishes drinking the water, things start happening. That has to be according to Reb Shimon, that the mincha has already been offered. The problem with that is Ema Sefer, look at the next part of the Mishnah. Yeshlus Chus Hoysitolala, where it says that if he has a schus, then it would suspend her punishment. Asan Rabbanan. That part of the Mishnah is only according to the Chachamim. De'ir of Shimon, Ha'ama in Schus Tolum Maimamarim. We learned in the first parak that Reb Shimon holds that schus does not suspend things by the Maimamarim, because Reb Shimon had said over there that if you're going to say that schus suspends things, then people are not going to be so afraid of the Maimamarim. Because they're going to think that they can get away with it. We learned previously and Dafbav that Reb Shimon says that ein schus toil of mayim amorim, because then what's going to happen is that he says over there that then when you have a woman drinks and is guilty and nothing happens to her, then she's going to figure in that case, and she and other people are going to figure that the mei soto are ineffective and they're not going to be afraid of it anymore, and vice versa, when you have a woman who drinks it and nothing happens to her, people are going to be motzi laz, they're going to say, you know what, she's really tummy, but she has a schus. So therefore, the mayor says the whole thing of schus protecting her never doesn't help in the first place. So our Mishnah doesn't, that part of our Mishnah doesn't seem to go like Reb Shimon. The Gemara does mention over there previously on Daf Vav that according to, that you have over there what the Misnavna, the Gemara said over there that you can have that, cause even according to the Chachamim, it's not that nothing happens at all. She does start deteriorating physically. She just doesn't have the Vitzav Sabitna Menachla Yerecha. She doesn't actually die from it yet. That takes time, but she gradually weakens and then gets sicker over time.
So we learned that it takes a single year, it does happen?
That's what we said. We're in the Mishnah. We said it could be a year, 2 years, 3 years, depending on the degree of her source. Yeah. Anyway, so who is our Mishnah like? The first part is like Reb Shimon, and the second part is like a Haman. The answer is Amar Chista Hamani Reb Akiva. The answer is that our Mishnah is like Reb Akiva. He says, as we learned the other day, that you bring the mincha and then you give her the drink, like the Chachamim say, like Reb Shimon said, but when it comes to schus, protecting her, there he disagrees with Reb Shimon. He holds like the Chachamim, that schus can help her for a year or 2 years or 3 years. We learned the other day when we learned about Rabbi Akiva, we had a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, what Rabbi Akiva holds, but we just, according to Rashi or Gemara, means straight out. We said over there, Rabbi Akiva holds like Reb Shimon as far as the order of things. According to Tosfos, who said over there that Rabbi Akiva holds like the Chachamim as far as the order of things. What we learned in the Gemara, eventually we said there were two Tanoim who disagree within what Rabbi Akiva said. So now we'd be saying that our Mishnah goes according to the second version of Rabbi Akiva. Then we said in the Mishnah, that the Kohenim would tell the people, get her out of here. There were even Gersois that say, Hotzi'uha, get her out of here as fast as possible, so she's not the Tame the Azara. So
she's not standing there, though.
That's the question. My time. The Dilma Mesa is a problem because she might die right there on the spot. So what's the problem? The Lememra, the Mess, also the Machna Levia. Are you telling me that a dead body is also to be in Machna Levia? She's standing in Shal Nikaner, which is the last part of what's considered Machna Levia, the only beginning, only from, so even a mess can be there, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. V'hatanya, and don't we learn in a Braisa? Tomei mess mutal likones l'machna Levia. A person who's tomei mess is allowed to go into the Machna Levia, which includes the Harabayas, and Midaraisa, it also includes the Chelum Ezra's Nashim. Midrabanam, later on, by the way, the Gemara mentions in a few places that Midrabanam, the Chachamim, in the time of the first Beis Mikdash, in the time of King Yehoshaphat, made a new Gzera and said that a Tumim Mess is not allowed into the Ezra's Nashim. The Gemara calls it over there, Chotzer HaChadosha. The Pasuk calls it the new courtyard. It means because they made this new halacha. But so they're not boning, you're not allowed to. But still, the fact that they're saying get her out of here as fast as possible seems to imply that it's actually a problem, Daraisa. So what's the problem? Daraisa, Tumim Mess is allowed to be there. But what Tumim Mess Bovad Amru? In fact, the Chachamim said not only a Tumim Mess is allowed to be in the Ezra's Nashim, Ela Afilu Mess Atzmai, even a dead body itself is allowed to be over there. It says Moshe took the bones of Yosef with him, and Imoy means in his area. And where did Moshe camp? In the Midbar, in Machna Levia. So we see that the bones of Yosef were in Machna Levia. So even a mess himself is allowed to be in Machna Levia. How much more so, and a tummy mess, certainly. So what's the problem with if she dies over there? Fine, let her die, and she's in the Ezra's Nashim, and there's no problem. Again, even if it's also Dirabbanan, so the Rosh explains that, fine, the fact that we're saying he has the Girsa, get her out of here as fast as possible. They wouldn't be doing it if it was only an Issu Dirabbanan. A different answer, Rabbeinu Tam says that it's one thing, that to bring a mess in there would be also Dirabbanan, but if a person dies in there, you don't necessarily have to be in such a hurry to remove them. So what's the problem? So the Gemara says, I'm going to buy a Shema Tifres Nida. The problem is not that she might die. The problem is that she might become a Nida. From the effects of the water. And a Nida is Taka also in Machna Levia. So the Gemara says, well, Memra to be a Susa Merafia. So are you telling me that fear causes things to loosen up? So therefore, like all of a sudden her Rechem may open up and then blood starts coming out. And the Gemara says, "Ain." As a matter of fact, yes. As we find by Esther, that when she got the news from Mordechai about what Haman is plotting, she was very frightened. And Omer Rav shepeirus a nida, and Rav explains in the Gemara Megillah, it means that all of a sudden, on the spot, she became a nida. The idea is that v'tischauchal is Moloshan cholol, hollow. So like the hollows, the insides of her body loosened up, and all of a sudden she became a nida. So yes, the fear can cause that. But the Gemara says, "V'hanan tnan charodim selectus damim." Don't we have a Mishnah in Nida that says that terror causes the blood to go away? You have a case over there where it describes where a woman is hiding out from robbers or whatever at the time when her period should be expected. And if it doesn't come at that time, then it means that we can still. Usually, what happens is usually when it comes time for her expected vest. If she doesn't do a bedikah at that time, then we assume she's tameh, even if later on she does a bedikah and finds it tar, because the likelihood is, the Gemara calls it urach bismane ba, the period usually comes at its expected time. But if at the time she was hiding out, then not, because charodim asalakas damim, the fear causes the blood to go away. So what are you telling me that fakir can cause her to become nigger? The answer is, there's a difference between a sudden scare and an ongoing thing. Pachdat samis, an ongoing fear, like there you have, she's hiding out from robbers or whatever, that causes the blood flow to suck. The asusa, but a sudden fright, merafia, causes her to become loose, and therefore that's what we're saying over here, that she might become a nida on the spot. And that's why we say as soon as possible to get her out of Machna Levia.
But there's
a difference. In other words, Tiferes Tzion points out that, look, even if you're talking about that all this time, she's been very firm, I'm going to drink, I'm innocent, and whatever, but now when she actually drinks and things start happening, then there's no fooling herself anymore, yeah. Okay. The Mishnah had said in Yeshla Schos Hoysev Cholo, that if she has a schos, then it would suspend her punishment for a year, 2 years, or 3 years. So the Gemara says, Mani Masnissin. Who is our Mishnah like? Loi Abba Yosef ben Chanan, Veloi Rabbi Elazar ben Yitzchak Ish Pardorim, Veloi Rabbi Shmuel. It doesn't seem to go like any of these three Tanoim who address this point in a Braisa. The Tanya. Im yesh la schos toila la shloish fadoshim. If she has a schos, it'll suspend her punishment for 3 months. Today hakoras over 3 months being the amount of time that it would take to recognize the pregnancy. Divrei Abba Yosef ben Chanan. That's what Abba Yosef ben Chanan says. The maximum is 3 months. Rabbi Elazar ben Yitzchok Ish Kardarim Oymer Tes Chadashim, 9 months. Shenem Venix of Nizra Azara. The pasuk says that she'll be cleansed and she'll have a child. And Olahalon Oymer Zera Yavdenu Yisupar. A different pasuk in Tilim says the seed of the descendants of the Jewish people that will serve Hashem and will be able to tell about the greatness of Hashem. So it means Zera Haroy Lasaper. So it has to be long enough that she could conceivably have a child who would be able to speak. So in other words, the maximum is 9 months. That conceivably after that she could become pregnant and 9 months later have a baby, who would eventually grow up to be able to speak Hashem's praises, and then only then would the mace start to have an effect. So the maximum is 9 months, then, according to him. And Rabbi Shmuel of Shnei Masachodesh, Rabbi Shmuel says 12 months. He says, even though there's not a solid proof for 12 months, there is a zeicha for it. Because you have a connection with Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar had a dream where the Neil explained the dream to mean that Nebuchadnezzar is going to go crazy and have to live with the animals, etc. So he tells him, Lahain Malka, therefore king, Milki Yishvar Allah, let my advice be favorable in your eyes, v'chatoyach v'tzidka furuk, redeem your averus, your chatoyim with tzidka, v'ava yosech, and your deliberate averus v'mechan anoyin, by being gracious to the poor. For example, that means, the Rosh says it means don't impose taxes on them. The Marshal says actually that it means don't impose taxes on them. And in that way, there will be an extension of your peace, that you'll have a peaceful time and you won't have this punishment happen. The pasuk continues. All of this eventually happened to Nebuchadnezzar. The next pasuk continues. After 12 months, then he got his punishment. So we see Rabbi Shmuel says a remez for the idea that the punishment can be delayed 12 months. Rashi over here brings, by the way, and he brings it on the psukim in Daniel as well. Why did Daniel give the Nebuchadnezzar that advice? And the reason is because there were many poor Jews at the time, and he figured that this way, better it should be like this. They're poor because of the Golos and the Churban, so better Nebuchadnezzar should be helping them out and supporting them. Yeah. With that said, the Gemara in Bava Basra tells us that he shouldn't have done that. He shouldn't have told the Rosh and Nebuchadnezzar how to delay his punishment, and the result was that eventually he suffered some kind of consequences himself, either that Chaschuhum Vigdolos, that he was demoted from his position, or that he was thrown into the lion's den, whatever was a result of giving this advice to Nebuchadnezzar. Anyway, so we see 12 months. So even Rabbi Shmuel says maximum 12 months. So where is our Mishnah getting 2 or 3 years? So the answer is La'olam Rabbi Shmuel. Our Mishnah does after all go according to Rabbi Shmuel. But Ashtach Krah the Amar V'Tanim. But we find a pasuk that mentions a repeated delay. Dichtiv. You find a pasuk. Hashem says on the Jewish people, or not on the Jewish people, on other nations, for example, Koyim Hashem Ashloisha Pishay Edom. Hashem says for 3 averus that Edom has done, I'm willing to delay their punishment, but not for the 4th. So we see that Hashem can delay the punishment up to 3 times. So therefore, if you can have by Nebuchadnezzar a delay of a year, then it can be multiplied and you can end up with 3 years. So the Gemara says, "My afkishen raya l'dava zeichel l'dava." So why is this not a solid raya? Why isn't he considered this a solid raya for 1 year or 3 years? The reason is, "Dom shiny every chavim b'lanafkin dina alai." It might be different with goyim, like in Nebuchadnezzar or Edom, for that matter, where Hashem is not so quick to punish them in Olam Hazeh, because mainly they're going to get their punishment in Olam Abba, so therefore Hashem might be willing to delay the punishment for 1 year or 3 years. It's not necessarily a solid proof that a Yid, where Hashem prefers to punish them in this world so that they have their place in Olam Abba, then maybe not necessarily. But still, we're saying that there is a Zeicher for it, and that's why the Mishnah says it can be up to 3 years.